Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, giving the edge back to the bettors with no fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank with no VIG or sportsbook fees. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Create an account and use code PGF for $20 free on your first order. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. Drink beer, talk football. You know what it's about. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? I'm your host, Brad Fowler, and McKenzie Brewing is the official beer of Pint Glass Football. Follow them at McKenzie Brewing. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. Got another loaded show today, guys. Some NFL takeaways from last week, including a head coach that deserves an apology. Matt Rhule fired in Carolina. Davante Adams in trouble. A Hall of Fame quarterback's career is off the rails. College football helmet stickers and NFL game balls. The pick six. College football talk and a look at three huge games this weekend in college football with guest Brandon Marcello from 24/7 Sports and a lot more to get to. So let's crack a cold one and kick this off. All right, I want to start with some recent NFL news. Marshawn Lynch is going to be joining Amazon Prime for their Thursday night football coverage. This strikes me as a little bit odd. I mean, for a guy who really didn't like the media, and when I say didn't like, I mean, he basically hated the media when he was a player in the NFL, now suddenly is going to be joining the media. I always find that to be kind of a weird dynamic. Plus, I'm just not sure how good this guy is going to be as an analyst and talking about football on a mic. This is just a really weird hire. And when you look at the Amazon Thursday Night Football coverage, look, I love Kirk Herbstreit and I love Al Michaels, but as a combo, it's kind of been a weird fit. Then you look at some of the analysts they have already. Tony Gonzalez, good guy, but kind of a bland analyst, a little bit dull, doesn't really have a lot to say. Richard Sherman just doesn't feel like a broadcaster at all. Then you've got Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's been okay, but just all in all, it's just kind of been a weird mix and match of former players and analysts and broadcasters they brought together here for Thursday Night Football. Throwing Marshawn Lynch into this mix just makes it feel even more weird. I don't really know what to expect from this. Like I said in the intro, most of you guys have probably heard by now, Matt Rhule, the head coach in Carolina, is out. He's been fired. Not surprising at all. This is a guy who was on the hot seat really coming into the season. We knew that this was a big-time put-up-or-shut-up type of year for him and the Panthers. They've been a mess again this year. They also fired their O-line coach, their D-line coach, and special teams coordinator. They are cleaning house in Carolina. Now there's rumors coming out that they're shopping Christian McCaffrey. Going to be interesting to see if they can find a trade partner for Christian McCaffrey, a guy that when he's healthy is one of the best running backs in the game, but we really haven't seen a full 100% healthy and explosive Christian McCaffrey. It feels like a couple years now, so might be tougher to move than people realize. And apparently, there's reports that teams are inquiring about Brian Burns and DJ Moore, two star players for the Panthers. Those rumors are floating around the internet right now. I expect owner David Tepper to push for them to really try to move as many players as possible and basically tank at this point and try to get a top pick in this upcoming draft because it is loaded with quality quarterbacks. Guys, we've been talking about here on the podcast, there's going to be quite a few players in this first round that are viewed as big-time prospects, and really that's been their biggest issue. They just have not been able to figure out the quarterback situation. It's been a mess. I said it recently on the podcast that Matt Rhule was going to join a long list of college football coaches that didn't succeed in the NFL. If you look at the past 22 years, first-time NFL head coaches coming directly from college football have pretty much all failed, with the lone exception of Jim Harbaugh, who had a lot of success with the 49ers. But other than Harbaugh, it is a long list of guys that just couldn't cut it at the NFL level. Historically, there's been a handful of college football coaches that have gone on to have a lot of success at the NFL level, but for the most part, it just doesn't work. And I think owners and GMs around the league are going to be more hesitant than ever to hire the hot college football coach. In other NFL news, Davante Adams is now being charged with a misdemeanor assault for shoving a photographer when he was exiting the field Monday night in Kansas City. This story exploded. I'm sure you guys have seen the videos by now. It's all over the internet. It's all over Twitter. A cameraman walks in front of Adams, and he uses two hands to shove the guy to the ground. Now, look, we've all done things that we regret when we're mad. It happens. I totally get it. You're frustrated about the loss. You're frustrated about the season and how things are going down and how your team is essentially going down the drain right now. But look, you're a pro athlete. Not only that, you're a high-profile one. If you're Davante Adams, you've got to be smarter than this. Sometimes people don't realize when you look at these NFL guys and when they're on the field together, you don't really realize sometimes just how big these guys are. I mean, these are huge, huge men who play in the NFL. When he shoved that photographer, an average-sized guy like you, like me, and like most of us, the guy goes flying. And, you know, luckily it sounds like there wasn't any major injuries, but what if that guy had cracked his head open on the pavement? What if he has sustained a serious injury? This could have been a major problem for not only Davante Adams, but it could have been a major problem for the NFL if that guy would have gotten seriously hurt. So I'm expecting a suspension to come down, maybe even by the time this podcast episode is released. I'm sure he's going to get hit with a minimum of a one-game suspension, maybe more than that. It'll be interesting to see how the NFL handles it. I'm sure he's going to get hit with a fine as well. Adams said, quote, "I felt horrible immediately." No, you didn't. Because here's the thing. If you felt horrible immediately after doing that, you would have helped the guy up. You would have gone up to him and you would have checked to see if he was okay. And you would have apologized at the time, not later to the media. Like I said, I get it. You're mad. You're frustrated. You did something in the heat of the moment out of anger. We've all been there. But Davante Adams, man, you got to be smarter than this. Because not only is he now facing most likely a suspension, a fine, but maybe some off-the-field trouble for Adams as well with this assault charge. Just a stupid decision by Davante Adams. That Monday night game was actually a really awesome game. I mean, it was really a fun game to watch. Came down to the wire. But unfortunately, the Adams shove of the photographer and the terrible roughing the passer call are really the only things people are talking about. But it's really not that surprising because what happened is the Tua injury on Thursday Night Football, where the whole world was basically watching a guy who shouldn't be on the field sustain a second concussion. It was hard to watch. It was a really eye-opening moment for the NFL. And the problem is that it's really caused the NFL to now overcorrect on the roughing the passer call. That call on Kansas City defensive lineman Chris Jones in that Monday Night Football game was just ridiculous. After it happened, Troy Aikman, who was on the call for Monday Night Football, said, "I'm all for player safety, but the protection of the quarterbacks has gotten to a ridiculous level." I couldn't agree with him more. That was such a horrendous call in that game. Chiefs fans just went ballistic. And quite frankly, I loved it because they must have booed for the next, it felt like 10 or 15 minutes straight. Every chance they got, they were just letting the refs have it. Look, Kansas City ended up winning that game. But that play, that overturned call there, or that roughing the passer call that overturned a fumble, I should say, that could have changed the outcome of that game. And that wasn't the only terrible call that we saw recently, because there was another call on Grady Jarrett for the Atlanta Falcons when he sacked Tom Brady on Sunday that was also a ridiculous call. And like I said, this is just a complete overreaction to what we saw from the Tua injury. And going forward the rest of the year, I expect a lot more calls like this. And it's really unfortunate because I think the NFL has to address this now. They've got to get in front of this, because if one of these roughing the passer calls affects a playoff game this year, the outrage from the fans is going to be deafening. I mentioned in the intro, there's a Hall of Fame quarterback whose game is completely off the rails. You probably already know who it is. I feel like I've been talking about this guy a lot lately, but seriously, Russell Wilson just continues to struggle this year. I mean, this guy has been downright awful. He's now off to the worst start of his entire NFL career. Denver is 2-3. I'm not even sure how they have two wins, to be honest. He's 28th in the league in completion percentage. That is absolutely shocking and brutal for a guy who's been a high-level quarterback for so long. He's 22nd in the NFL in passer rating. The offense for Denver has been horrendous. And I get some of this is play calling. Some of this is just having a bad rookie head coach. But we've got to put some of this on Russell Wilson. The guy is just not playing very well at all. He's a big reason why this team is only averaging 15 points per game. And what's really sad is that defense is pretty damn good. But the offense has been so bad that they're struggling to win games. Why am I hammering this so much? Well, Russell Wilson became the NFL's second highest paid player at $49 million a year when he signed that extension with Denver. And at this point, he is easily, and it's not even debatable, the most overpaid player in the entire league. You're paying a guy top tier money, and he looks like one of the worst quarterbacks in the entire NFL right now. The Broncos' new ownership group must be sick watching this Broncos offense. Well, I told you there's a head coach that we owe an apology to, and that is Mike McCarthy of the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm on that list for sure, because I have been blasting this guy. This guy has been getting crushed by the media, like I said, myself included here. I'm pointing the finger at myself here. And the Cowboys were a team that was completely left for dead after the Dak Prescott injury. Once again, myself included here, I didn't think there was any chance that the Cowboys would be competitive with Dak out of the lineup. I didn't think there was any chance that they'd be in the mix to win that division and in the mix for the playoffs, but that's exactly where they are right now. They've won four straight with Cooper Rush at quarterback. It's been really impressive what they've been able to do. Now, he wasn't great last week, but overall, he's been really solid. Hasn't thrown a pick yet this year. Mike McCarthy is coaching his butt off right now. The defense has been awesome. They've been lights out on that side of the ball. Micah Parsons is the defensive player of the year right now. The offense has been really balanced, and that's what I've been really impressed with. The play calling and the balance on that side of the ball. Hats off to him and this team. They are right in the mix in the NFC. It's been so impressive what they've been able to do. And like I said, for a coach that most people thought was on the hot seat, most people thought was going to get fired this year, most people thought that this team was going to under-deliver again, and they are over-delivering right now with a backup quarterback. Super impressed with the Dallas Cowboys, and they have a huge game this week with the Eagles. But speaking of the Eagles, the Twitter poll question this week, at PGF Podcast. If you guys aren't following me on Twitter, hit me up at PGF Podcast. I've been doing these Twitter poll questions. I love incorporating them into the show because I love getting your guys' take on these questions. I asked you guys on there, are the Eagles a Super Bowl contender? 68% of you said yes, 32% said no. I'm not going to lie, I was a little surprised by the results. Them being undefeated, I did expect a lot of you to say yes. I didn't expect it to be almost 70% of the vote, though. And this poll question got a lot of votes, by the way. Now, when I look at this team, they've beat the Lions, who are 1-4, the Commanders, who are 1-4, the Jaguars, who are 2-3, the Arizona Cardinals, who are 2-3. Only their win over Minnesota has been impressive. So really, when you look at it, they've beaten one good team. And I almost have to put an asterisk next to that win, because quite frankly, that was a win versus primetime Kirk Cousins, who we all know is garbage in those spots. And this is a guy who really should have thrown about 8 interceptions in that game. He was terrible. He gave that game away for the Vikings. When you look at those other 4 wins, you've got 4 wins versus teams with a combined 6-14 record. Are the Eagles good? Yes. Super Bowl good? I'm pumping the brakes on that right now. Time to give out the college football week 6 helmet sticker. It's going to go to Pittsburgh running back Israel Abanikanda. Unreal performance this week versus Virginia Tech. This guy racked up 320 yards rushing with 6 touchdowns. Unbelievable performance. This was a no-brainer pick for the helmet sticker this week. He averaged 8.9 yards per carry. This guy was a first down basically every time he touched the ball. He broke off 7 runs of over 15 yards, including an 80-yarder. Hats off to that Pittsburgh O-line as well. They dominated up front. They opened up some big holes and set up a monster game for Abanikanda. The NFL Week 5 game ball is going to go to Bills quarterback Josh Allen. No need to overthink this one either. 424 yards passing, 4 touchdowns, 1 pick, and 42 yards rushing. This guy had 348 yards in the first half. I mean, they put this game away. Midway through the second quarter, this game was completely out of reach. If the Bills hadn't taken the foot off the gas, Josh Allen could have easily passed for over 500 yards and probably had 5 or 6 touchdowns in this game. Now, look, the Steelers are not a very good team. They're really having a tough time this year. But this performance was absolutely lights out. Josh Allen showing everybody why he is one of the MVP frontrunners for the NFL this year. Just incredible what he was able to do. All right, it's time again for the
Pick 6.
Look, been kind of a rough year betting. Not going to lie, not my best year making picks, but had a nice week last week. Went 4-2 for you guys. Looking to keep it going this week. I'm going to start off in college football. I'm going to take Ole Miss laying the 14 points at Auburn. When you look at Auburn this year, versus ranked teams, Auburn has been outscored 83-22 this season. They only have 1 Power 5 win over a weak Missouri team, and that was in overtime. They're 1-5 against the spread this season. They're a bad football team. They're going up against an undefeated Ole Miss squad that is averaging almost 40 points per game. I think they're going to put it on them, laying the points with Ole Miss and feeling good about it. Sticking with college football, I'm going to take Kansas +9 at Oklahoma. Look, I took Oklahoma last week, but after getting destroyed by Texas, I came to the realization that this team just isn't very good. I really have been overvaluing them. I took a closer look at this team and just realized that this defense is downright terrible. They're giving up an average of 48 points per game in their last 3 games, while Kansas, on the other hand, is 6-0-1 against the spread in its last 7 games as an underdog. This team has been covering as an underdog. They're getting 9 here. I think there's a ton of value. Quarterback Jalen Daniels is going to be doubtful for this game, but backup quarterback Jason Bean came in last week, played awesome. I mean, this guy really came in and played good. I still have faith in this offense, especially versus that bad OU defense. Give me the Jayhawks. Third pick for the pick 6. I'm going to take the Buccaneers-Steelers game under 43.5. 43.5, not a lot of points, but it's not a lot of points for a reason. I think that's because Vegas knows this is going to be a bit of a struggle to put points up in this game. Kenny Pickett, only in his 2nd start this week with an offense that's really struggled all year long versus a Bucs defense that is really one of the best in the entire NFL. The Bucs offense only has 1 game this year where they scored over 21 points. And last week, the Steelers got lit up by the Bills. I just talked about Josh Allen and what he was able to do last week. But I feel like that's a little bit of an outlier because the Bills' offense is elite. And if you throw that game out, the Steelers' defense is only allowing 22.5 points per game. So this just feels like a defensive battle. That's why I'm going to take the under here. All right, my next pick is the Atlanta Falcons, +5.5 at home versus the 49ers. Home dog that has been covering every single week. Now, that might come back to haunt me. I'm not going to lie. I might be going to the well 1 too many times here. But Atlanta has been in all these games. They've been covering and they've been close. They're either winning or they're covering basically every single week. The 49ers are dealing with a lot of injuries and some injuries to some key players as well. The Falcons offense is really flying under the radar right now. Marcus Mariota has been moving the ball. They've been a lot better than people realize. And the 49ers are playing now back-to-back East Coast road games. This is also a line that opened at 6. And a lot of pro money has come in and bet this game down. So this is one of those situations where I'm going to follow the pros and fade the public here. Falcons plus 5.5. Next game, I've got the Cleveland Browns -3 at home versus the Patriots. Patriots with a rookie quarterback in his second start going up against a Browns team that desperately needs a win after a close loss to the Chargers last week. This is a team that's going to have a lot of desperation. They know they've got to get this one if they want to stay in the mix in the AFC North. The Patriots, on the other hand, getting a little bit overvalued because of that blowout win versus Detroit, and they've got a win versus Pittsburgh. So this isn't a team that's been exactly impressive. And when I look at these rosters, the Browns have a way more talented roster. I'm a little surprised they're not a bigger favorite. So I think there's value laying the 3, especially for the home team. They've got a good home field advantage. And like I said, just a better, more talented roster. I'm taking the Browns and I'm going to lay the points. The last pick of the pick 6 is the game of the week. Man, this is a big one. I know everybody in PGF Nation is going to be watching this one. I'm taking the Kansas City Chiefs +3 versus the Bills. These are the two best teams in the NFL. Like I said, game of the week, no doubt about it. Kansas City is coming off of a close win to the Raiders, and the Bills are coming off of that blowout win versus Pittsburgh. And I think that's why, when you look at the recent games here, that's why the Bills are getting favored. Two evenly matched teams. I don't think there's a lot that separates these two teams as far as the quality, but yet somehow Kansas City is a home underdog. One of the best home field advantages in the entire NFL. Anytime that you're going to give me the Chiefs getting points, especially at home, this is an automatic bet for me on the Chiefs. That's going to do it for the pick 6, but I've got a bonus pick for you guys on Twitter at PGF Podcast. I'm going to post a bonus NFL betting pick on Twitter for you guys, so be sure to check that out.
Pint Glass Football Podcast is presented by Better Edge, bringing the edge back to the bettors with no-fee sports betting. At BetterEdge.com, you, not the books, set the price of betting lines so you can make bank. Better Edge is available in 45 states for real money sports betting. Play the game without getting played at BetterEdge.com.
Excited to be joined by Brandon Marcello, who covers college football for 24/7 Sports. And be sure to check out 24/7 Sports YouTube page because they have exclusive interviews with college football coaches that you're going to want to check out. Brandon, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you on. You guys do such a great job there at 24/7 Sports, covering all things college football, and you especially cover the sport like very few do. I'm excited to dive into some college football topics with you here. I want to start with the most important position. This season has seen some really incredible play from the quarterback position. Guys like Caleb Williams, Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Quinn Ewers, Hendon Hooker, Jalen Daniels, DTR. The list just goes on and on, Brandon. So I'm going to ask you, who's the best quarterback in the country right now?
Man, it's a great question. I think it's C.J. Stroud at Ohio State because of all the weapons he has around him. And he's put up Heisman-type numbers. He hasn't really had a quote-unquote off weekend and off Saturday. So I really like him in this race. But you know, I was looking at the favorites, the betting favorites, and going into this week, and 6 of the top 7 betting favorites in Las Vegas, those players have the potential of have a Heisman moment this week. And by that, I mean they're going against an elite opponent. And these 3 undefeated matchups we're going to see this weekend, these players are featured in. So players that I'm really watching, of course, C.J. Stroud's one of them, but one guy who's kind of the outlier that people have rising up boards is Hendon Hooker at Tennessee. He's been such a potent threat, and he was last year as well, one of the better passer ratings in college football. Now he's going up against, obviously, the top team or number 3 team in the country in Alabama. This is his moment. If he can put up some big numbers and have that big play, you know, that we're replaying over and over again, and Tennessee upsets Alabama, I think Hendon Hooker may very well be the number one guy as we approach mid-October. But again, he's got to have that Heisman moment this week. So when I look across the country, right now it's Stroud and then just kind of everybody else kind of trying to lead the charge and have that big moment. And no one's really had that yet.
Yeah, you're definitely right. C.J. Stroud is viewed by many as maybe the top quarterback prospect going into the NFL draft, and for good reason. You hit on it. This kid's been electric. He has put up some great numbers. He shows great touch. I love the playmaking that he brings to the table from that position. But it's been a fun year. I mean, the quarterback position has been so fun to watch this year. It seems like it's always fun, but this year just seems especially deep. I rattled off a bunch of guys, but I swear I could have named 10 more guys that have all been exciting and fun to watch. And one of them that I mentioned was Texas quarterback Quinn Ewers. This guy put on a show in the Red River rivalry, blowing out Oklahoma, a team that many people had as a top 10 team entering the year. Now they sit at the very bottom of the Big 12. This is a program that expects to compete at the highest level. So how long of a leash will new head coach Brent Venables get at Oklahoma?
You know, I think it's kind of crazy. A lot of people just kind of think that he might get fired after year one, but that's the environment we're in now, I guess, with college football. Everybody's so willing to just kind of push aside the coach. But, you know, listen, Lincoln Riley there was going through some issues as well, just with the roster and the talent. And he had a roster last year that wasn't all that elite, to be quite honest. And he left behind a roster that he pilfered, obviously, with Caleb Williams and Mario Williams going to USC and following him there. But also, they had NFL talent leave that defense. And so the idea that OU was not going to drop off this year was kind of strange to me. I thought they would drop off. I thought it would still be good enough to contend in the Big 12. But the problem is that it was bad timing, right? Dylan Gabriel gets hurt against a very good TCU team, does so on the road, and that team just completely changes offensively. Same, of course, the very next week in the Red River rivalry. But I think here what we're seeing is an offense that isn't quite clicking with Dylan Gabriel out, and for that matter, was still struggling a tad at times in some key moments when Dylan Gabriel was healthy. And so I think you got to start questioning Jeff Lebby, the offensive coordinator there. He, of course, had some great success at Ole Miss, but wasn't necessarily the game planner and play caller. Lane Kiffin was that guy. And so I think there needs to be some questions about the coaching beyond Brent Venables and what's going on there. What's not working with and without certain players? The defense was going to drop off. That, of course, needs to be questioned, but it was going to drop off. And I think a lot of these factors, the injuries, Dylan Gabriel being out, and then the losing, it compounds. And it makes a defense that's not good look even worse when they're out on the field. They know that kind of hope is lost when they get down 21-0 and the offense can't do anything. So I say pump the brakes on this idea of Brent Venables being out after 1 year. I think he just needs to look at his staff and figure out what's going on. And then secondly, he's got to amp up that recruiting, because I've said this before too. Texas is probably built recruiting-wise to succeed more in the SEC than OU. OU, not necessarily that. And they've got to fix that. They got to start preparing for life in the SEC, because it's coming here, you know, in less than 2 years or maybe 3 years, depending on if they get out of the Big 12 early.
A disappointing season so far for a program that, like I said, expects to be playing at a very high level and probably doesn't have the same level of patience that a lot of other programs would have. But I'm with you. I think this is still a very good coach, and I think he has a chance to be a really great head coach at Oklahoma. The point you made about Lincoln Riley taking a lot of the talent from that program and leaving the cupboard a bit bare is 100% valid as well. I guess the one thing that I expected was, with Venables being a defensive guy, one of the best defensive minds in college football, coming over from Clemson, I guess I expected that side of the ball to be playing a little better. But I do totally understand your point about losing some key players on that side of the ball as well, and not really having the same horses that he had when he was at Clemson. So I think it's a great point. I think it does come down to some timing and maybe looking around the coaching staff as well. I thought those were all very valid points. And your point about recruiting is going to be key, because we know that's the lifeblood of college football. And going into the SEC, things are going to turn up a notch. Now, sticking with first-year head coaches, Who's been the most impressive so far this season? It seems like there's a lot of guys that have made a big impact for their new teams. Who do you think's been the most impressive this season so far?
I kind of got to go with Lincoln Riley, just because he took over a program that was in complete disarray, didn't know how to win, and he managed to fix the roster, went through the transfer portal, of course, and he'll get criticized for that because he, quote unquote, stole players from OU, but that's not the only program he got players from. And secondly, they're winning it the same way he's did it at Oklahoma, which is a proven model that he's been able to carry with him to USC. And that is the sign of a great coach. When your system works, no matter where you go, that is a very good sign for the coach and what they're able to do and what they've done in the past. So to me, it's Lincoln Riley. He's undefeated right now. I'm not so sure that's going to stick after they play Utah this week, but I think he's done a marvelous job combating some shortcomings on their defense. The defense with Alex Grinch, the former OU defensive coordinator, has done a good job of getting takeaways. They lead the nation in turnover margin at plus 14. And they've been able to capitalize on now that, you know, they lose that Oregon State game a couple weeks ago if they don't have the four turnovers against quarterback Chance Nolan like they did, because that defense had to keep them in the game, and they found a way to do it by being opportunistic and picking off those passes. So I've been very impressed with what USC has been able to do. I know the popular things kind of hate on them, but Lincoln Riley's kind of model just travels with them, and it works.
Yeah, I agree. And I've been pumping up USC. I pumped them up all offseason because I felt like there was a lot of people in the national media that were kind of downplaying USC and making it seem like, oh, you know, give him a year or two. And I was saying, no, look at what he's done here, because you hit on it. He brought in a big time influx of talent. He brought in a bunch of big time players. He flipped this roster over quickly with proven guys. And I was saying on this show, like, look, this team's going to be good. They're going to be a contender in the Pac-12. And depending on how well they play in that conference, maybe even an outside shot at a college football playoff type of team. A lot of people didn't like that. I got a lot of pushback on social media, but so far I'm with you. He's been really impressive with what he's done with that team, that program, and how quickly he's turned them into a very, very good team. Now, I mentioned Oklahoma, but they aren't the only team that came into the year highly ranked that hasn't lived up to the hype. So going into week 7, who's the most disappointing team in college football right now?
You know, I think a lot of people maybe say Notre Dame, because I even thought after week 1 they were still a legit maybe top 5 team because of that defense. And they've rebounded well since then, going on the road and beating North Carolina the way they did. I thought it was impressive. They beat by BYU last week. They're starting to rebound. They're starting to find their identity offensively. But outside of that, I got to go to Houston. They've been in complete kind of just train wreck. I know they won last week against Memphis in a miraculous way, by the way, when they had scored like 3 touchdowns in the fourth quarter when they were just listless for most of the game. But this was supposed to be the year for Houston to win the AAC. Cincinnati was going to be down after losing all those amazing players they had, including Desmond Ridder last season. And so you go into this year thinking, I thought, Houston, which was rolling last year, especially end of the year, with a lot of pieces coming back, they were going to not only contend, but should be the favorite maybe in the AAC. And they've been anything but. They've been just completely inconsistent offensively. They've been disappointing defensively. And at times, it looks like that team just quit. Now, maybe they get things going now after they beat Memphis. But even so, that's not a top 25 team. It's not even a top 40 team. And they're not going to win the AAC this year. And so I know it's a group of 5 school, not a lot of people want to talk about it, but to me, the most disappointing team as far as what they should accomplish and what they're going to end up putting together this season, that team to me is Houston.
Yeah, that's a great answer, because I don't think a lot of people from a national narrative, I don't think they necessarily think about them on the same way that they do some of these big power programs. But I'm with you. This is a team that should be a lot better. They had a lot of talent coming back this year, and they were, like you said, they were set up in a position to have a really good year. They've been really disappointing. I like your point about Notre Dame as well, because I am completely with you on that one. The week 1 game had me thinking that they were going to be a good team. I thought this is a tough team. Like you said, that defense looked legit, and I thought they were going to keep them in every game this year. Like you mentioned, they've rebounded a bit, but they've been certainly disappointing from where people had them to start the year. So those were great answers by you. I want to jump ahead here, though, because you mentioned it at the top of the show here. There are some big-time matchups coming up this upcoming week. I want to dive into these and get your thoughts on some of these games. Three huge matchups, actually, featuring undefeated teams in all of these games. Let's start with number 8 Oklahoma State taking on number 13 TCU, who just ended Kansas's undefeated season. Oklahoma State is coming off of a nice win versus Texas Tech and an impressive win over Baylor the week before that. What jumps out at you in this matchup?
You know, it's a matchup between two teams that haven't done very well against teams similarly ranked to them. So something's got to give here. What's insane, though, is that Oklahoma State, we kind of just like forget like everything Mike Gundy does there, but they're 5-0 for the second straight year, and they're trying to go 6-0 for the second straight year as well. It's kind of insane what he has done there at Oklahoma State. And yet, everybody's kind of falling in love with this uprising there at TCU under Sonny Dykes. And in fact, I was in Lawrence, Kansas to watch and report on that game against Kansas this week. And, you know, TCU is pretty complete when we look at the Big 12 with their defense, their offense. They can win several different ways. They can run the ball, but man, they're so explosive throwing the ball. And they finally got that going with Quentin Johnston, a first round NFL draft potential pick there with a career high. And 14 catches this past week. He finally got going after just kind of a slow start to this year. This is a huge game. Any other week, this would be the number one game in the country. But what's so interesting is going to be kind of see how Kansas State maybe fits in all this here in a couple of weeks. Kansas State is kind of off the radar right now with a bye week right now. But Kansas State still has some teams here, some games here that could potentially play into the Big 12 race and maybe not necessarily put Kansas State in a position to win it, but maybe could put Oklahoma State or TCU for that matter out of it. So I'm very interested to see if TCU can run the ball effectively against Oklahoma State and for that matter, protect, Oklahoma State, see if they could protect Spencer Sanders against TCU's defensive front. It wasn't necessarily a problem for Kansas this past week. And I think Kansas, with Jalen Daniels going down, they were able to kind of spark things back up with their backup quarterback. And I think that showed some holes and put some things on tape for Oklahoma State this week. And they watched that against TCU's defense and go, oh, we can really throw the ball around on these guys. And that is going to be something really fascinating to watch.
Yeah, you're definitely right. This is an exciting matchup, and you hit it on the head. I think just about any other week, this would have been the premier matchup, but we just happen to have a week with loaded matchups. And I also like what you said about Oklahoma State, because this is a team that I think because they've had to live in the shadow of their in-state rival there at Oklahoma, I think maybe they don't get the national recognition that they deserve for being a very, very solid program. And like you said, having two great starts back-to-back here in the Big 12 and off to another great start this year. This is going to be a fun one to watch. Another fun one to watch here is going to be in the Big 10. Number 10 Penn State taking on number 5 Michigan. J.J. McCarthy got the starting quarterback job for the Wolverines. He's been really good. He's been taking care of the ball, but neither team has faced a test like this. This should be an incredible atmosphere at the Big House. What are the key matchups to look for in this game?
Yeah, you know, first off, you mentioned it. Michigan and Penn State have not played anybody, either of them. The combined record of their 11 opponents is 27-39 this season, and they have not beaten a single opponent who has been ranked at any point this season. It's a really kind of incredible stat to look at. And then also Michigan's 3-24 against top 10 teams since 2008, including 0-3 against Penn State during that time. And then Penn State's 1-18 against top 5 teams. This is an opportunity to kind of get monkeys off the back there for Michigan and Penn State. As far as matchups, I think as much as we talk about Penn State's run game, if Michigan can get some semblance of a pass rush and just mess with Sean Clifford, Penn State's quarterback, I think they win going away in this. And the reason why I say that is because the Wolverines have struggled a little bit in their pass rush. And I look particularly to their game a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago against Maryland. They were really not getting to the quarterback, and they had to depend on their back end, their cornerbacks, to cover for an extra second or two. And they did a pretty good job in doing so, including getting some picks. But Sean Clifford's a guy that is going to be able to sit back there, and he makes the right decisions if you give him time. If you speed him up, that's when the anxiety gets rocketed up with him. And that's been his problem there for years. That's what gets him going and gets him on his back and rethinking things in the middle of snaps. If he's got time back there, he's deadly. He's very potent. So to me, Michigan's got to find a way to get to Sean Clifford. I think the run defense will be there for them, for Michigan, but that's really the top thing I'm looking at. The Wolverines got to get that pass rush going, because that's been a little bit of a struggle at times.
Yeah, it seems like the game, whether you're talking college football, you're talking the NFL, it's always won or lost in the trenches. We love to focus on the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the playmakers, but usually that's what it comes down to. And I think you're right. That's going to be a key in this one, to see if that Michigan pass rush can put pressure on him, because you're right. He's very good when he's comfortable, but you can definitely rattle him when he gets under pressure. So that'll be something to watch for in that game. Now, last but not least, number 3 Alabama, number 6 Tennessee. The Volunteers haven't been in a big game like this in a really long time. Now, they have 3 top 25 wins on their resume, including that impressive blowout win over LSU last week. And no disrespect to the defending champion Georgia Bulldogs, but we know Alabama has been the gold standard in college football essentially since Nick Saban took over. What does Tennessee need to do in order to shock the college football world and pull off the upset?
You know, do what they do. Hendon Hooker's got to be potent. They got to throw the ball around. They got to get Alabama's defense in a hurry and on their heels. Tennessee, one of the fastest offenses in the country, was number 1 for a while in the country just as far as plays per minute. They got to get them riled up. They got to get that defense in a position where they're not able to substitute as often as they want, and they don't have fresh bodies out there, and Tennessee's able to take advantage. Listen, Alabama's got some warts. They've got some weaknesses. We saw it this past week against Texas A&M. But of course, it certainly looks like at this point that backup quarterback Jalen Milroe, who ran an offense that had 3 turnovers in the first half against A&M, that's not going to necessarily be something that holds them back against Tennessee, because it appears, as of today, as we're recording this, that Bryce Young is going to be back on the field starting for the Alabama Crimson Tide after missing the bulk of the last game and a half for the Tide. So you can correlate some of these struggles the last couple of weeks, including against Arkansas, when Arkansas came back within 28-23 and then ended up getting blown out, to Bryce Young just not being on the field. I think their confidence was shaken, and they have had some issues in being able to kind of keep things going, keep their feet on the pedal and on the throats of their opponents. But you have to worry about the mindset of Tennessee. I mean, they're 0-15 against Nick Saban when he's been at Alabama. That mark is only surpassed by Arkansas, which is now 0-16. Can they topple them? Yes. I mean, the point spread is not all that big for a reason. Tennessee is playing very well. The thing that worries me about Tennessee's ability to knock off Alabama, one is that mentality, as I mentioned. And then secondly, Tennessee's defense has been great statistically when you look at things like the pass rush, and for that matter, just scoring defense. But there's an outlier there that makes me worry that this is consistent and they're going to be able to keep it up. And that's total pass defense. And some people will sit back and say, well, that's because they're running so many plays in so little time that the defense is out there more often for Tennessee. So teams are playing catch up. They're throwing the ball more. Well, not necessarily, sure. But that number, which was in the 100s going into last week, is starting to catch up and kind of even out some of those stellar numbers when we look at third down defense for Tennessee in particular. And that's what was their issue last season. Third down defense, they were one of the worst in the country. This year, one of the best in the country, right? But their pass defense is so low. So what? There's got to be a correlation. Those two have got to meet in the middle at some point. And so for Bryce Young and co, if they can get the ball out quickly, they're going to have a lot of success throwing the ball against this Tennessee defense, whether it's through the short game, intermediate game, or long game. But I think it's going to be mostly from the short game. And Tennessee's going to be in some trouble there if they're not making their tackles and keeping everything in front of them. So keep that in mind. Tennessee's defense, when you look at like the big number, scoring defense, total defense, looks great. But that pass defense doesn't necessarily correlate with what's going on third down for them. And I have a feeling that Alabama's going to be able to kind of get into that a little bit and push Tennessee around.
That's great insight on the Tennessee secondary and the defense as a whole there. And with Bryce Young coming back, that could be trouble, it sounds like, for Tennessee. That's going to be fascinating. This quarterback matchup is going to be so much fun. So many talented players on both these teams. It's going to be an awesome game. I can't wait for that one. And it has been so much fun to have Brandon Marcello, who covers college football for 24/7 Sports, on the show. Once again, be sure to check out his work and go to the 24/7 Sports YouTube page as well, because they've got some great stuff on there. Brandon, thanks again for coming on the show. It has been a blast.
Yeah, thanks, man. Anytime I get to talk to college football is a good day.
That is going to do it for today's episode presented by Better Edge. Hope you enjoyed it, PGF Nation. Hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on new episodes, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter at PGF Podcast.